This morning we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, entitled Prithu Maharaja's Meeting with the Kumaras, text number 36. Translation. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life. But we know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller, responsibly purport by Srila Prabhupada. Can it be a long one? In our material existence, we accept a higher form of life as a blessing and a lower form as a curse. The distinction of higher and lower only exists as long as the different material qualities or gunas interact. In other words, by our good activities, we are elevated to the higher planetary systems or to a higher standard of life, good education, beautiful body, etc. These are the results of pious activities. Similarly, by impious activities, we remain illiterate, get ugly bodies, a poor standard of living, etc. But all these different states of life are under the laws of material nature through the interaction of the qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, we see that there are various types of births in this world. There are 84 lakh or 8,400,000 different species, and each species of life has its distinct qualities, manifest consciousness. And generally it is considered that when you come to the human form of life, you have reached the highest stage of evolution, both in body and, of course, as we say, in consciousness. And in the human form of life also, there are higher and lower births. For example, if you're born in London, that's a lower stage of birth. And if you're born in Glasgow, that's higher stage. But anyway, if you're born in America, that's the highest. But we see that there are people who are practically like animals, although in human birth. No very discernible, manifest consciousness. And there are others who are relatively enlightened. So people are very much concerned about this in the material world. What is your birth? What is your lineage? Who do you associate with? This is important, a status in society. And if you're from a low family, a low birth, nobody will give you much importance. But all these different states of life are under the laws of material nature through the interaction of the qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, karnam guna sangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. Because of our association with goodness, passion, and ignorance. These are currents in the material world. We can call them gunas or qualities or ropes. Another word for guna is a rope, which may drag you here and there. For example, we use ropes to pull the cows from one side of the grazing field to the other, or back into the barn. So we are also pulled by ropes, subtle ropes, like currents in a river. You may be washed out to the middle of the stream, or you may be washed in, or you may be dragged down, under tow. So these subtle influences are there. Everything is there, gross and subtle. So goodness, passion, and ignorance, they have to be defined, and they will be defined. They are defined in the Bhagavad Gita. What is true goodness? What is pure goodness? What is passion? What is ignorance? What are the qualities? But we can accept in principle that we're not the masters of our fate or the captains of our destiny. We are being dragged from one situation to another. But all these qualities will cease to act at the time of dissolution of the entire cosmic manifestation. The Lord therefore says in the Bhagavad Gita 8:16, which is chapter 8, verse 16, which is? Okay, thank you. Brahma bhuvana loka punarvartino arjuna mam upeti tu kaunteya punar janma na vidyate. From Brahma lok down to patal lok, or from the highest state of existence, the highest planet in the material world, down to the lowest. Living beings are moving continuously. Punar, punar, puna, puna, charvita, charvananam. Simply doing the same activities over and over again. In fact, if you step back and see it in total, it's really a dull life. There's no variety. It's just the same eating, sleeping, mating, and defending over and over and over again. So we may get another body, but the story of the chaste wife and the crippled husband who was brought to the prostitute, and on the night of their enjoyment, the prostitute brought him some foodstuffs, prasadam, of course. Same foodstuffs, but she kept some in a gold pot and some in a brass pot. And after he tasted both, she asked him, "How did you like it?" He was confused. He said, "Well, it's the same, whether it's from the golden pot or the brass pot. I don't understand." And she said, "Yes, you do. Why are you considering that sex life from a beautiful body like mine is different than sex life from the beautiful heart from the woman you are married to? The same taste, just a different pot." So all over the material world, it's like that duality, but it's the same taste. So this conception that higher birth and lower birth, sometimes so-called lower births are free from anxiety, where so-called higher births are full of anxiety. Just like in Bombay, in the Juhu scheme, you've heard much to do about Bollywood as opposed to Hollywood. I think in the UK there's been a big thing. Now, all the young people are wannabes in Bollywood, the Bombay cinema industry, largest in the world, more movies than any other, than Hollywood certainly, and even more than Japan. So, right in our area, Juhu is where all the mega stars and all the moons and, you know, all the whatever, I won't say it, live. And you go out to meet them, to bring Krishna to them, to bring Mahaprasadam to them, to discuss Krishna Katha. And there's so much in anxiety because they have to protect whatever they have. That's the nature of the material world we were discussing the other day. Fear. People are fearful. They're very anxious to get more and more, but when they get it, they become very fearful to lose it. And believe me, as I drive around London and I see people in their wonderful cars, I think London is one city where I see more Mercedes and more Bentleys and more Rolls and more fancy cars than maybe Los Angeles has as many or more, I don't know. But certainly of all the cities in the world. But people are in big anxiety having to maintain, because these cars are imported cars, most of them. And they're not only expensive local cars, but on top of that, they pay a huge import fee. So how to maintain all of that? They have to work like donkeys day and night, and they have to be aware of predators. And I'm not talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger. You've got to be aware of him, too. He's nothing. His heart will get him. But it's very interesting. The fact is that all these pumping iron, pumped up iron heads, they die young. They don't live long lives. It looks like, oh, they're on top of the world, you know, they're so muscular, so beautiful, so attractive. No, they pay a huge price because their body can't take it, their heart can't take it. And if they slow down at all, again, their body can't take it. It goes into shock. Schwarzenegger is, I don't know how many triple bypass surgery already at his age, and so many other examples of that. And then on the ladies' side, models, they do so many bizarre things to keep that slim, trim figure. And they suffer. I mean, there's probably more anorexia amongst models than there is amongst any other group of women. And anorexia is a serious disease and it leads to death. Very hard to get out of, and 95% are women. So no matter what you do in this material world, you cannot win. So different types of higher and lower states of existence materially, but when the dissolution of the universe takes place, everything is lost, and we're wound up again into the body of Mahavishnu, the material energy, pradhana. It is like when I work with, when I'm doing puja, when the pujaris are doing puja, we have what we call blue tack, or white tack, or whatever, plasticine, basically. And it's, you know, it's like a gooey
lump or lay flattened out, but whatever. And you pull something off of it, and you can shape it any way you want. And then the next morning, you have to take it off, and you push it back in the lump, and it just kind of merges in the lump of blue tack. So that's what happens. All the bodies get lumped back into the total material energy. They lose all form, etc., until the next creation. So what is the use endeavoring for something that is going to end very quickly, even if you attain perfection at it? And that means that you may have to aspire, you may have to work for many lifetimes to get what you want. For example, Prabhupada said that Mr. Shankar, who plays the sitar, Ravi Shankar, said he has had to endeavor for many lifetimes to attain that position. And what is the use? He'll die and it'll all be over because he's reached the zenith of his sitarism. And in the same way, whatever we try for, it's all wound up, it's all finished. Even though we elevate ourselves to the highest planetary system by the scientific advancement of knowledge or by religious principles, great sacrifices and fruitive activities, at the time of dissolution, these higher planetary systems and life on them will be destroyed. In this verse, the words Isha Vidvangshita Shisham indicate that all such blessings will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. So, Vidvangshita means destroyed, lost, gone forever. We will not be protected. Our bodies, either in this planet or in another planet, will be destroyed. And again, we'll have to remain for millions of years in an unconscious state within the body of Mahavishnu. And again, when the creation is manifested, we have to take birth in different species of life and begin our activities. Therefore, we should not be satisfied simply by a promotion to the higher planetary systems. We should try to get out of the material cosmic manifestation, go to the spiritual world, and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is our highest achievement. We should not be attracted by anything material, higher or lower, but should consider them all on the same level. Our real engagement should be in inquiring about the real purpose of life and rendering devotional service to the Lord. Thus, we will be eternally blessed in our spiritual activities, full of knowledge and bliss. Somehow, we have to become detached. Kunti advises us, also in the same way, Janma Aishwarya Shruta Sribir. Again, good birth, good education, wealth, whatever one may have, one should simply become detached from that. Someone who's going to be successful in spiritual life, he has to become akinchana, niskinchana. Because Krishna is gochara. He's purchased. Now, you know, maybe you have some pounds in your pocket, some sterling, and you want to go and buy something. So you pull it out, and this is your, Bhakti Charaswami is talking about it, simply a vehicle of exchanging, simply a method of acquiring material affluence. What is it? How do I buy Krishna? Some people, you know, I can buy anything. Money can buy anything I need. How do I buy Krishna? What's the price? Well, we have to become totally detached. That is not to say that we divorce ourselves from the particular birth situation that we find ourselves in this lifetime. We can go on with that. It is not a question of moving from London to Glasgow, from a lower state to a higher state. But it is a question of changing our consciousness. And we have to do this by our mind. Udareda atmanatmanam, natmanam avashadayat. Udared, one has to elevate himself by his mind. Otherwise, atmaiva hi atmano bandur, atmaiva ripuratmano. Your mind can be your bandhu, your friend, or your mind can be your ripu, your enemy. And if you don't get detached, somehow or other, understanding that this whole thing is going to be destroyed in the end, then you won't be able to get attachment for Krishna. Because, like the glass of milk, you can't put 7-Up in it, or whatever devotees put in it nowadays. I see more and more devotees drinking 7-Up. So funny. Prabhupada starts. Anyway, good for digestion. It inhibits the flow of electrolytes into the body, especially calcium, but it's good sugar water with bubbles. So if you have milk in the glass, that's it. If you want to put something else, you have to pour the milk out. If we want to invite Krishna to come in our lives, then we certainly have to get rid of whatever kachra is in there. Kachra means garbage. But it's not that we stop dealing with the material world. That is quite possible. But we don't, just like Einstein couldn't remember his phone number. Albert Einstein, you know, 180 IQ, the wizard mathematician who gave us relativity theory and who was a wizard on quantum physics and even a philosopher, vegetarian, had familiarity with the Gita and the Upanishads. Albert, he couldn't remember his phone number. That doesn't mean that he couldn't phone his home. But when asked, he said, why should I keep in my head information that's easily available in the phone book? So in the same way, we don't need to keep material consciousness inside us. We can deal with it, but on a superficial level. But we should keep in our hearts, in our minds, this vision of surrender to Krishna, of service to Krishna, the practical attempt to serve Krishna, how we will achieve it, how we will do it. That should be our inner thinking, rendering devotional service in full knowledge and bliss. Regulated human civilization promotes dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. In human society, there must be religion. Without religion, human society is only animal society. Dharmena hina, pashu bhisamana, pashu, animal. Without dharma, dharmena hina, without dharma. We may be doing so many things. We may be very sophisticated. It may be very impressive. But
simply sophisticated cats and dogs. Economic development and sense gratification must be based on religious principles. So everything can be done as long as they are based on dharmic principles, religious principles that, again, religion is not, it's not a good word because it infers or indicates a particular faith, whereas dharma is something else. Dharma is the essential quality of anything, water, fire, whatever, fire, heat, and light. You do not expect to touch a cold, dark fire. It doesn't, you know, they don't fit together. The house was burning down and we all froze to death. And we couldn't see our way out because it was completely dark. No, fire means heat and light. And the soul means sanatana dharma, or dharma, this service, idea of serving. So economic development and sense gratification will be there. You cannot avoid it. You just have to stay in Watford Temple for a little while and you get so much sense gratification. There's Kalanganas Maha Sweets, there's Maha Prasadam, there's Gadadhar Pandit's feast day. A lot of it revolves around prasadam. Right? There's kirtan, singing and dancing. We go on a rave every night. You know, a lot of sense. You can't avoid it as long as you have a body. The sansparsaja, bolga, the contact of the senses and the sense objects is there as long as we have a material body and as long as there are sense objects. But how to adjust everything in such a way that we don't get entangled? How to break the teeth of the serpent so that the poison doesn't act? So everything must be based upon religious principles. When religion, economic development, and sense gratification are adjusted, liberation from this material birth, death, old age, and disease is assured. In the present age of Kali, however, there's no question of religion and liberation. People have taken interest only in economic development and sense gratification. Therefore, despite sufficient economic development all over the world, feelings in human society have become almost animalistic. Well, that was, you know, 30 years ago the Prabhupada wrote this. I think we can take out the word almost now. It's definitely animalistic. When everything becomes grossly animalistic, dissolution takes place. This dissolution is to be accepted as Isha Vidvamsita Shisham. The Lord's so-called blessings of economic development and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction. So we see this in immediate terms and also in remote terms, or in other words, at the end of this yuga, the end of Kali Yuga. But even immediately, as people become more and more animalistic, as people become more and more irreligious or adharmic, their economic situation deteriorates. Because all of these things are the blessings of God. We cannot create anything without the blessings of God. Therefore, it is said that yagya sistashina shanto,
Muchante sarva kilvishai. What is that verse? Anyway, without proper performance of yajna, there will be no rain. And, of course, in one sense, you could think of a yajna as a big fire sacrifice. But in this age specifically, it means chanting of the holy names. Now, it could mean a big Sankirtan party going 24 hours a day all around London or all around the UK. But more likely, it would mean that in every town and village, in every home, in a regular way, there is chanting of the names of God and following a simple, pure way of life. And this could relate to the names of Jehovah or Allah or Krishna, any bona fide name of God. But in every respect, we find that religious life is decreasing. And therefore, there's chaos. And even impending worse chaos. The future does not look that bright. And all the economic pundits agree that there's great ambiguity. And things can get much worse than we realize. It takes a few years to trickle down. And even though the stock market may have fallen down, even though there may be increased unemployment, even though the cost of commodities has gone up and there's some scarcity, but still we're carrying on. Even though there's a threat that social benefits may be eclipsed, may be taken away, but still, we're carrying on. But we don't realize that as it continues, it will get worse and worse and worse. We did not become affluent overnight, and we may not become destitute overnight. But if we're going in that direction by neglecting our duty to offer homage to that Supreme Person who is giving us all these blessings, then surely, eventually, we will all feel the result, the fallout of our sinful activities, or even their sinful activities. And what is our sinful activity? Our sinful activity in relation to their sinful activities would be that it's our duty to enlighten them, to give them Krishna consciousness, to tolerate whatever difficulties there are being pioneers in such an endeavor, and carry on until, of course, I don't expect, and I've never heard, that everybody will take up Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada said, even if 1% of the population take up Krishna consciousness, it can change the whole atmosphere, the whole what do you call when off in the distance, when some of that's the thinking of a word? Huh?
You're talking to someone. Say loudly.
Loudly.
Horizon.
It can change the whole horizon. It can change everything. Even if 1% takes it. So we have a duty there to try to educate people with all our heart and soul, to give them this wonderful message. Persons, the Lord's so-called blessings of economic and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction. At the end of this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as the incarnation of Kalki, and his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. You know, sometimes one of the reasons why
I like to worship Nrisimhadeva. There are many things, of course. He was the deity of Nanda Maharaj. So Krishna grew up in his father's house worshipping Nrisimhadeva. But apart from that, he was also the form of Vishnu, just like in this millennium, this creation, we have our Vishnu, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. So Vishnu is there. In the previous creation, it was Vishnu as Nrisimhadeva. So apart from many other reasons, I always had a problem when people would walk into the temple and there was this beautiful painting, I don't know who it was, by Jadarani or Parikshit or somebody. Yeah, that one. And, you know, Hiranyakashipu's there and this lion is tearing his guts apart. And, you know, people say, oh, this religion is a little heavy. And I've said, well, this is about good and evil, really. You know, it's symbolic to some sense, in some degrees, and it was hard to explain. But when I went a little deeper and I found a very nice verse in the fifth canto where the devotee prays to Lord Nrisimhadeva that Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya. Namaste Jas Tejase Avir Bhava. Dear Lord, you have very sharp teeth. And you have razor-like nails also. And you are very, very powerful. So I'm humbly requesting you, please rip out my anarthas, because they're deeply stuck in there. I can't get them out ordinarily, normally, in the normal course, because I'm so stubborn, even though the process of devotional service is very powerful. I need your mercy to just use your wonderful nails and cut out my anarthas. So when Krishna comes to perform any activity, such as Kalki, it's for our benefit. He's helping us to advance when we've fallen so low. And his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like childish play. Children may play on the beach and the father will sit and watch this childish play. The construction of buildings with sand and the construction of walls and so many things. But finally the father will ask the children to come home. Then everything is destroyed. Persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when he destroys their construction of these things. One of the, as a young non-devotee, I used to look for God in music. How many people ever did that? Lots, probably. Anyway, my generation. Talking about my generation. There was one animal. There was one man, gentleman from, he was actually from Seattle, but he lived a long time in Vancouver. And so, you know, we're always big fans. And he wrote one song where he said, castles made of sand slide into the sea eventually. And I thought that was really cool. You know, hey, he's got some realization, you know, you can see. So true, castles made of sand will slide into the sea, and that's what people are building. So many, I remember in Hare Krishna land when Mr. Sethi helped Srila Prabhupada in a difficult time. He personally undertook to build one story on top of all the buildings at the back of Hare Krishna land where devotees could move out of this horrible hut. And, your school teacher, Moksha Lakshmi, yeah, she'll tell you what it was like to live in that. I have no idea how hellish it was, what austerity it was. I'm just recently, we discussed it at our 25th, our silver jubilee celebration in Bombay. We had some 65 god brothers and god sisters there. The mood was so wonderful. I can't believe it. It's just, it was one of just unrestricted service from the second generation towards all these first-generation devotees. And the first-generation devotees, even some of them were not engaged in devotional service now, but had performed austerities in the past. They were so overwhelmed that they just opened up and gushed all these wonderful tales of activities with Srila Prabhupada. And then the second generation were just in ecstasy hearing. So it was very mutual, loving experience that everybody, including GK, including Guru Kripa, said it was the best festival we've ever attended. But the mood was so wonderful. So anyway, this Prabhupada, Mr. Sethi had liberated the devotees at that time from living in this hut. That subject came up again and again, how ghastly it was. We never realized it so much because, of course, we had Prabhupada in that. It wasn't always there, but he spent more time in Bombay than any other temple in the world. But it was still suffering. And finally, Mr. Sethi built these one story on top of the building. Prabhupada said to him, you're building these stories here, but what you're actually doing is building your own house in Goloka Vrindavan. So that's what we want to build, not castles made of sand. What's the use in all this childish play? Really, what is the use in it? Somebody please tell me. It's a total waste of time. As I said the other day, this whole material world is just a big joke on us. You know, we're being made fool because of our uncontrolled desires. So, in the 10th canto, the Lord says, Yasyaham anugranami harishye taddanam shanai. The Lord told Yudhisthira Maharaj that His special favor is shown to His devotee when He takes away all the devotee's material opulences. So, this is a verse, actually, I believe, Sukadeva. Parikshit asked Sukadeva the same question. How is it that devotees, when they worship Krishna, they get liberation, and when they worship Lord Shiva, they don't get. They worship other demigods. So Sukadeva was very pleased by the question. He was very pleased to answer the superior position of Vishnu or Krishna. And he mentioned that the same question was asked by Yudhisthira. Lord Krishna explained that the first installment of my mercy, when I like someone,
is that I take away everything. Tadhanam, his wealth. Hari, I take it away. Maybe not quickly, but shanai. Gradually I take away. And we did a seminar in Mayapur on the Shri Dev, and it was very nice. Means we had many people speaking, including Pankajangri and Dhruva, myself, and a few others. A lot of nice things came out, but one of them was that when doing Shila, Puja, householders can worship Lakshmi, Nrisimha, but they should not worship Ugra Nrisimha because he brings heavy renunciation. And householders don't want to have everything taken away immediately. So if they worship Lakshmi Nrisimha, they will get mukti and they will get material facility for their household. But Krishna takes away the devotee's material opulence. Therefore, generally, it is experienced that Vaishnavas are not very opulent in the material sense. Well, a few years ago, in a discussion with the Brindisroop, we both concluded that one of our problems is that we're very poor as a community. Now, we have been wealthier in the past, and we saw that devotees were. And frankly, they were very generous in supporting different projects. I remember Rameshwar when he was awash with dollars. Everything was, book distribution was booming. He supported so many different projects, the Fate Museum and the art department and education. He was supporting so many things, giving grants from the BBT to different temples around the world. So it's not that devotees are by nature like Mr. Scrooge or, you know, by nature devotees are good, but Daridra Dosho Gunarashi Nasi, when a man becomes poor, it appears that he loses his good qualities. But, of course, if you get Krishna, this is the thing, and we really have to see this, it does not matter whether you're in a higher state or a lower state or a middle state or whatever state. If you can somehow get Krishna, you've got the best. Sabse kimti cheese, you have the very best thing, most valuable thing. So, Prabhupada laughed. He read this verse. I believe he read it, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Bhagavatam Tika. He explains this verse and Prabhupada read it. And he laughed because by that time he had become slightly disinterested in his material activities, maintaining his family. Look at that. He had five children. Prabhupada had five children. And of course one of them died. But none of them became devotees. So don't feel badly if you have children and you can't force them to come to the temple because they have to choose on their own. You can prompt them, give them encouragement, but you can't force because they're individuals. But he had already started to neglect his business, but Krishna accelerated the process. His sons squandered the money, his servants stole facilities, and he just laughed. He didn't think, oh God, this is terrible, I gotta get back to work, you know. He just thought, let it go, Johnny, though. Forget about it. He was in
join Krishna's mercy, even though he was Krishna was taking away his wealth. When a Vaishnava, pure devotee, tries to be material opulent and at the same time desires to serve the Supreme Lord, his devotional service is checked. The Lord, in order to show him a special favor, destroys his so-called economic development and material opulences. Thus, the devotee, being frustrated in his repeated attempts at economic development, ultimately takes solid shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. This kind of action may also be accepted as Isha Vidvankshita Shisham, whereby the Lord destroys one's material opulences, but enriches one in spiritual understanding. So the same thing with Lord Chaitanya. He destroys the demoniac mentality, his astras. His weapons are the holy name, and he destroys the material mentality. In the course of our preaching work, we sometimes see that materialistic persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means they want more and more material opulence. I remember so many people would come. One day, a man came for darshan. Srila Prabhupada, you know, he brought in, like, he had a whole army, you know, this is my wife, this is my daughter, this is my daughter's son, this is, you know, Prabhupada. And afterwards he said, they just come and they say, this is my sex life, this is my sex life, this is my sex life, please bless them. They don't come to ask, you know, what is the purpose of human life, how can I get free. They come to a sadhu to get some blessing. And that's why you find a great predominance of Mayavadis. They're actually Bhogavadis, but they pretend to be Maya. Real Mayavadi will not be seen in a big city associating with grihastas or women. They'll be out in the forest practicing austerity. But anyway, these so-called Mayavadis, they come, and people come and give dakshina, and Swamiji, please give me your blessings. He says, yes, yes. They say, Swamiji, you are God, and please give me your blessings. Here's some dakshina, and he touches them, yes, yes, blessings. And they, oh, now I can go on with my material activities, so. You know, it's a mutual cheating arrangement. We sometimes see that material persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means they want more and more material opulences. If such material opulences are checked, such persons are no longer interested in offering obeisances to the devotees. Such materialistic persons are always concerned about their economic development. They offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work with a view that they will be rewarded with further economic development. For example, people think that if I perform some religious activity, I'll go to heaven. But that heaven is also described as akasha pushpa, will-o'-the-wisp, and liberation, kaivalya narakayate. Liberation is also rejected by the devotees because it's, again, it's all temporary. It's all part of the same joke. However, when one is sincere in his devotional service, the Lord obliges the devotee to give up his material development and completely surrender unto him. Because the Lord does not give blessings of material opulence to his devotee, people are afraid of worshipping Lord Vishnu because they see that the Vaishnavas who are worshippers of Lord Vishnu are poor in superficial material opulences. Again, superficial material opulences. Such materialistic persons, however, get immense opportunity for economic development by worshipping Lord Shiva, and for Lord Shiva is the husband of the goddess Durga, the proprietor of this universe. By the grace of Lord Shiva, a devotee gets the opportunity to be blessed by the goddess Durga. Ravana, for example, was a great worshiper and devotee of Lord Shiva, and in return he got all the blessings of goddess Durga, so much so that his whole kingdom was constructed of golden buildings. Here you go. In Brazil, in this present age, huge quantities of gold have been found, and from historical references in the Puranas, we can guess safely that this was Ravana's kingdom. This kingdom was, however, destroyed by Lord Ramachandra. Now, how do you like that, huh? It's not actually Sri Lanka, but it's Brazil. Any Brazilians here? No? Okay. It's true. There are... Brazil is kind of a mystical country. And I've seen caves. I've seen on the mountaintops, in the mountains outside of Rio and one other place, I saw inscriptions in the stone in inaccessible places in Sanskrit. I don't know how they got there. Some Sanskrit scholar from India went there and climbed up a mountain and scratched it in. I doubt it. So, anyway, food for thought. By studying such incidents, we can understand the full meaning of Isha Vidvangshita Shisham. The Lord does not bestow material blessings upon the devotees, for they may be entrapped again in this material world by continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. Due to materialistic opulence, as persons like Ravana become so puffed up for sense gratification. Ravana even dared kidnap Sita, who is both the wife of Lord Ramchandra and the goddess of fortune, thinking that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure potency of the Lord. But actually, by such actions, Ravana became vidvangshita, or ruined. At the present moment, human civilization is too much attached to economic development and sense gratification, and is therefore nearing the path of ruination. So we can use material opulence. In fact, it is phalgu, vairagya, to think that we can reject something which can be engaged in Krishna's service, false renunciation. But we have to be very careful, whatever we do, to engage it according to religious principles. Otherwise, bhogaisvarya prasaktanam taya purita chetasam, will become bewildered by material opulence and sense gratification. If we want to even understand our position that this is spiritual sense gratification, it's sense gratification. You're eating food, your tongue is stimulated, you enjoy rasgullas more than you enjoy jalebis, or, you know, there is some discrimination. But animals also have the power of discrimination. Animals, like, for example, a tiger, a ferocious man-eating tiger. A trainer comes, and he cracks his whip for 3 or 4 days. Then he brings some food and cracks his whip. And gradually the tiger begins to understand that this man will kill me. So he lies down at the feet of the trainer and is very sweet. But when the trainer goes away and another person comes along, he jumps on him and eats him up. So he has power of discrimination. But for what? In our human form of life, if we are humans, we can use this power of discrimination. What is sense gratification for Krishna service, and what is sense gratification for my own aggrandizement? And we have to make these distinctions if we want to relish
the process of Krishna consciousness, but you can't carry on like this forever in allowing yourself to remain enmeshed in material consciousness. You know, no matter how hard, no matter how good you are at gritting your teeth and how forcefully austere you are, unless you get a little bit of amrit for which we're always hankering, unless you get a little taste of that. You can only do that by following the process as it is given in our disciplic succession. Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Just a quick thing. I was very interested in what you were saying about the connection between Radha's goal and Brazil.
You would catch up on that, wouldn't you?
My devotees who get into that kind of stuff. My understanding was, again, I've got no description.
Huh?
My understanding was, although
yeah.
I don't have any
yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
the gold was taken from Sri Lanka through tunnels to Brazil. I don't know. It says something here. You heard it as much as I did. In Brazil, in this present age, huge quantities of gold have been found. Now, if they had found huge quantities of gold, they wouldn't be the poor country that they are. Maybe they found a lot, but I don't know. In Brazil, in this present age, and from historical references in the Puranas, we can guess safely that this was Ravana's kingdom. Now, in that, perhaps you could say that this was the gold from Ravana's kingdom. It's not in there, but it might be implied for one who knows the reference or knows the story. So, it could easily mean that the gold was taken from went back and forth between Brazil and Sri Lanka.
He's talking about the Spanish invading South America, Brazil. They did find a lot of gold. They took a lot of gold.
Sure.
To the Spanish.
Okay. Thank you very much. Rantraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.